This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy Special Edition podcast, Superman vs. the Elite. You're listening to an iFanboy Special Edition podcast on Superman versus the Elite. My name is Paul Montgomery, and joining me, the iFanboy Animation Squad, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Mr. Christopher Niesman.
Hello there.
And Ryan Haupt.
Everybody else seems to be saying hello, so I will say hello as well.
Greetings and salutations.
Aren't you fancy there, Ryan?
Usually I'd say like, hey, or howdy, or something, but y'all said hello, so whatever, hello, it's fine.
we're going to talk about the 14th film in the DC Universe animated original film series, which they're changing the name of, just to throw us off. I think it starts probably with the next film, but they're changing the name to something else.
Earth's Mightiest Heroes? That seems to be a popular name.
Superman versus the Elite, which is based on Action Comics number 775. And has everybody read that issue?
Yes.
I read it this week. I hadn't read it before then.
It's funny. It's a comic that I bought because it looked important whenever it came out. I don't actually remember reading it, but I have dug it out just for this. I didn't read it before I watched the movie though.
Well,
but I do
well,
have it.
You brought your textbook home. You just didn't do the assignment.
Yes, and the dog ate my homework, Teacher Paul.
So, just in case anyone hasn't either read the issue or know the context of the story, this was an issue that came out in 2001 in March. And it was a response to the era of comics in which The Authority was probably the most popular or most buzzworthy book at the time, which was a Warren Ellis Wildstorm book, which was about a bunch of heroes who were kind of modern and sarcastic.
It was anti-heroes.
They were anti-heroes, and they flew around in a ship in the Bleed, and they monitored the world. They spent their time taking down dictators and righting society's ills rather than stopping bank robbers.
They were extreme.
They were ultra-violent. Brian Hitch's art changed the way comics looked, and
they were extreme and well-written.
And yeah, I'll go ahead.
Not to say it was bad. It was a great comic, but it was very popular.
Awesome.
Love The Authority.
So the idea that these were the way heroes should be, these kind of ultra-violent, you know, anti-heroes, really struck a chord with Joe Kelly, who wrote this issue of Action Comics in response, in which Superman faces off against the Elite, which is a barely disguised version of the Authority, and shows them why he's Superman and they are not. So this is the most recent film, and I wanted to start off by saying I noticed for the first time that Andrea Romano did not direct the actors in this movie.
Oh, she didn't.
I didn't see Laura Montgomery in
Well, Laura Montgomery hasn't done every film, but Andrea Romano has done basically every major Warner Brothers DC production, at least that Bruce Timm's been involved with since you know, going back to Batman, and she wasn't the voice casting director or you know, voice director.
She does a talking head in the making of, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and if people don't know, realize the director directs the animation, but the voice director directs the actors. So there's actually two directors on an animated film.
Oh, okay.
She's actually the one who directs the performances. So it was interesting. It kind of threw me for a loop because I always just used to seeing her name. Not that I think it mattered, but it was just interesting to note. But basically, the plot of this story is similar to this comic in that, you know, the elite show up. They're these new heroes. One of the lead is a Manchester Black who is from England, and they are ultra-violent. They decide that Superman isn't going far enough in letting, you know, he stops heroes, puts them in jail, they get out again. So they decide that's no good. They're going to start killing heroes, and the world finds them to be awesome and Superman to be passé, and they come into conflict. So that's basically the plot of the film. Paul wrote a review on iFanboy. You really liked it. Paul, why don't you tell us?
I like this one a lot. I thought what was kind of refreshing about this is that they're not trying to cram a whole graphic novel or a longer run into their minimal screen time that they get.
Even then, it was, I think, 10 minutes longer than the usual film.
This was 76 minutes, according to the fine people of Wikipedia. So this was taking it's longer than a regular single issue. I don't know how many pages the original What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way is. I did read it right before I watched it, so it was kind of cool to compare and contrast the two. But so and the other thing that's cool, Batman Under the Red Hood, this was written by the guy who wrote the actual comic, the source material. So that was Judd Winnick in Batman's case, and in this case it was Joe Kelly. So that was really cool to have the actual writer do it. And in a way they get to revisit things, and I listened to the audio commentary that he did with Eddie Braganza, and he talked about how he wished that he could go back in time and tell 2001 Joe Kelly, you know, wouldn't it be neat if you did this and you could tweak it this way, and that might be kind of interesting. And so he got to adjust a few things that may not have worked out as well in the original story. I really liked it. It was a story that had room to breathe. In the original comic, you sort of start in medias res with the elite already sort of on the scene, and they've killed a giant kaiju monkey thing, which is not in this. There's a different giant monster, but it's not a giant monkey because that's sort of too absurd to do in a direct to video kind of thing. At least that was their explanation. But Superman actually gets to go through an arc in his relationship with the elite. At first, he's happy to have someone help him, you know, fight crime, and then he gradually becomes wary of their tactics, and by the end they get to this full-blown confrontation and things get kind of scary. So I was really impressed with the arc that they had in this story, and they could tell a longer tale without it feeling shoehorned.
Chris, you having not read the book, what did you think?
I enjoyed most of it. The animation style threw me off a little bit because I've become, you know, I know that DC has been, or Warner has been, kind of mixing up the animation styles over the last few years. But every time one of these comes out, you know, I kind of yearn for the Bruce Timm animation of Batman and Justice League. So it took a little bit to get used to the anime style of the animation. But as far as the story goes, it felt like, you know, a true Superman story of this is what makes Superman what he is. It's like, it's almost like All-Star Superman of taking all of the kind of core ideas and values and asking, you know, and, you know, Clark or Superman has to ask himself the question of, am I this generation's hero? Am I the hero that this world wants anymore? And I really like how the story was kind of pitting two generations against each other, because, you know, in a lot of ways that's what the turn of the century felt like for a lot of, you know, I think a lot of observers was, you know, the new versus old, that I think when every generation kind of meets the next, it's kind of that mixing of oil and water, and how do they actually interact? And that's kind of what I felt here was, okay, we have the Superman that everyone knows and loves, kind of like an uncle. Well, now here's the, you know,
The cooler cool uncle.
The cool cousin from out of town, and how do they interact? And we find out that while the cool cousin from out of town is fun and exciting, it's the cool uncle that you always loved is really the one that is better for you. I think is, you know, kind of how I felt about it.
Interestingly, but, it's totally similar to Kingdom Come, which
very
is,
much,
yeah. which was a few years before this issue came out. But that was, I think, in the minds of a lot of people, apparently at DC at the time, is our heroes too old fashioned? And I think that a lot of creators went and said, no, they're not. They're awesome. Here's why. Ryan,
DC. Sorry to DC's characters, I think, had fought the stigma of being kind of stodgy and old world for a long time in comparison to Marvel, and so I think that they were kind of farming on those feelings of, yeah, Superman, you know, may be old fashioned, but he's still awesome. And then you get a guy like Joe Kelly that kind of takes that idea and shows off that, you know, if Superman really did get pissed off, he would be the baddest man in the valley. And you know, and this comic and movie showed that off a little bit.
Now, Ryan, you're a young kid. You must prefer Manchester Black to Superman.
I'm barely younger than Paul, but I am younger. That's true. No, I don't. I'm a huge Superman fan and always have been. And I actually read The Authority before I ever read this issue of Superman, and became a huge fan of The Authority before ever actually reading this issue of Superman. And I have read this issue and like it quite a bit. I liked that this movie didn't drop us in media res, since we're being all alliterative with our word usage. But at the same time, I thought that the build... Yeah, no, it's good, but I just thought the build-up to the conflict was a little slow, and the animation style... I'm a huge fan of Doug Mankey's art, and I was a little disappointed. I recognize why they couldn't use his style, because there are a lot of lines, but they did such a good job adapting Mazzucchelli's line work into a style that could be animated, that I was a little disappointed that they didn't do that with this movie. And I thought that the way they did animate things, everyone looked a little overly simplistic and cartoonish, for lack of a better word. I know that's not a great way to
describe
it.
I agree with that. I think my biggest gripe with the film was the animation style. I don't know. Because it did look simple, and especially the wide shots. Suddenly a lot of the detail disappeared. I don't know if that was the style or if that was a economic decision or what. I don't want to assume.
For me, when I enjoy the animation of their weekly series Young Justice, much more than their feature presentation, that something is off there. And
no, I'm with you.
And step back. Yeah.
One of the plot points of this story is that there's a cartoon that Superman has sanctioned voiced, I think, where.
That was funny.
It's super old school. Yeah, it's slapstick. It's very silly. And I thought there needed to be a bigger divergence between the two animation styles, because even in the quote-unquote real world, Superman still has a chin that defies... I mean, he'd be outed as Kryptonian instantly with a chin that size, because no human has a chin that big.
I think animation's kind of like the score in a film, or the style's kind of like the score in a film, or coloring in comics, and that if you don't notice it, it's usually doing its job. Unless it's really good, then you notice it for being really good. But if you notice it for being bad, then you're detracting from the story. Which to me, I kept noticing, and now it took me out of it for a second. But you know, it wasn't bad, just it wasn't great. And you know, they've done a pretty good job of being great animation house in general, but.
Ultimately, I really enjoyed this story, and I thought it was a worthy adaptation of the comic. And yeah, the animation was one issue I had, and the only other major issue I had was that Superman's reaction time seemed to be completely variable, and his power set almost seemed to be inconsistent. Like, there were times where things happened, and I'm like, Superman has super speed. He could have handled that situation a little better, which is a really nitpicky thing, but when people's lives are on the line, I felt like I was justified in complaining about it.
They actually call that out in the audio commentary. Eddie Braganza is like, when the first person dies at the hands of Atomic Skull, who apparently was originally supposed to be Parasite, but I guess
I guessed Parasite when I first saw the person come all shriveled up, and I was like, ooh, it's going to be Parasite, and then I saw Purple, and I was like, I'm right, and then it was Atomic Skull.
Yeah, it's Atomic Skull. And it makes more sense if you, that death at the end, the Baxter character, where his son is holding him, shouldn't he be disintegrating like the other characters who were turned ash? And so if you think that was originally Parasite, then he would just be leached husk of all his so it would make more sense. But anyways, that was a last minute decision, I guess, that they wanted to use Atomic Skull instead of Parasite, because I guess
I'm
worried about Parasite overexposure,
right?
Go ahead.
Where Rick Jones is protected from a nuclear blast by one scrawny scientist.
Yeah, well, when the first
cartoon science, Ryan, cartoon science.
I was okay with it.
When Atomic Skull first, ashifies that if we're gonna ignore that, I just used the word ashify. That guy in the beginning, Eddie Braganza is like, why didn't Superman swoop in and save him? And Joe Kelly was like, well, there's a pacing thing, and we just wanted to show what the bad guy could do, and just caught up in the moments. So there's some pacing stuff. I guess I liked the animation style a little bit more than you guys, in that I didn't hate it, but
I didn't hate it either.
The most noticeable, I think, was that big the biomechanical monster, the big scorpion thing, whatever we're calling that.
Yeah,
it's fighting in between these two sets of buildings in this big expanse of dirt. It doesn't look like a city street at all. It's like this,
yeah,
I don't know, this the weird, so the setting for that one was kind of odd.
Call it my nationalistic pride. I think that our animation styles here are pretty good. I don't see why we have to ape Japanese.
I wouldn't say that this
styles.
Is anime style.
Yeah, a lot of it is. A lot of it's very.
I see what
Chris
is saying in terms of the emotiveness of the characters, and yeah, I see what Chris is saying.
I think there are other of these DC animation features that lean more towards the Eastern style.
If you think
style
back to the Batman
one,
that was anime.
Both
anthologies, the Green Lantern one as well is also more heavily.
But they had gone to Japanese animation studios for those,
right?
So I don't know what they did with this.
Well, and then a lot of things that we consider Western animation are actually done in Eastern countries. So it's based on Western character models,
sweatshops.
Really bring Scott McCloud in on the brain trust for animation.
So let's talk about the end. Now, the end, the whole movie leads up to the big fight between the Elite and Superman, where they've decided they're going to take over. Their old heroes are done. They're going to kill Superman and be done with him. And Superman basically cuts loose. And spoilers ahoy, he kills the Elite one by one in very horrifying ways. And Chris mentioned earlier that if Superman really got mad, he'd be the baddest guy in the block. Well, this is the moment you see that. It's true. If he got really angry, everyone would be screwed, and it's terrifying. I remember in the comic, it's really terrifying. Doug Monkey did a really good job with making Superman look unhinged.
Yeah.
And then it's revealed, of course, he didn't actually kill everybody. He faked it all, but it appropriately terrified everyone into thinking he did. So, to me, bigger than the animation, the biggest disappointment in the movie, and I didn't dislike the movie. I liked it quite a bit. I'd probably put it in the upper middle part of the pack of movies. Is that we had a long build-up. They added a lot more to the story because, again, like Paul said, there's only been one issue they were adapting, so they added a lot of story. But they got to the end, and it just sort of ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought if the biggest part of the movie is this ending part, maybe that should have been the part expanded on as opposed to everything else. We got to the end. It lasted – it wasn't a super short scene, but it wasn't super long either. And then the movie just kind of ends. And I thought for a 60-minute build-up, to just end it right after that scene was a bit disappointing. I thought I wanted more out of that, and I didn't quite feel the terror as much as I thought I would. Maybe because I knew it was coming.
Glowing red eyes.
No, it was good. I just thought, if you got all that extra time to let the story breathe, why not use that on the big part of the story rather than the beginning? But it was that's a relatively minor problem considering just me wanting more good stuff than anything else.
I hear what you're saying, and for me the problem with the final battle was Superman's powers seemed so inconsistent throughout the entire story that I didn't really know what he was capable of. Like,
he's Superman.
He's Superman.
Okay, so for example.
Give us an example.
For example, we talked about the opening scene with Atomic Skull where his reaction time allows a person to die. But then there's the awesome scene with the fighter jets coming into Bialya where he is moving faster than the human eye can perceive and being totally awesome. And so as the final battle scene approaches, I don't know which Superman I'm going to get at that point. And I have no problem with the variable power set of Superman dependent on the story, but I at least kind of want it to be consistent within a single story. And so coming into the final battle, I'm like, well, I have no idea what Superman is capable of.
Well, because Superman is, he's like all of us. Do you always run as fast in every situation at the same speed?
Yes.
I mean, sometimes you run faster when there's an emergency. You run even faster, and when you're pretending to be a murderer, you run even faster.
I think it's the old question of how strong is Superman, and the answer is as strong as he needs to be.
Right.
You know,
he pulls his punches sometimes.
Yeah.
He doesn't always unleash.
The movie, he's not going full speed. He's going half speed, which is what.
But
you're
people
going.
A lot of the time because of it. Yeah, I'm rooting for the
can't
elite.
Save everybody. Come on, Ryan.
It's all there, and we will nitpick that, but it's all there to serve the story, and I understand that it's Superman can kind of be the golden handcuffs for a writer because you can do anything.
It's like Flash. You have to depower him at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do anything. You know, as predictable as the ending was, and, you know, if you're a comic book fan or Superman fan, you saw the ending coming from a million miles away. I liked it, and, you know, it really just, you know, kind of hammered home that Superman's, you know, greatest quality is his moral compass. And that, you know, just was kind of harped on over and over in this. My only fear is that, you know, this was a feature that was based on a comic that is you know 10 years old and those you know more than 10 years old now, and those turn of the century comics were definitely of an era and of a feeling. Did you think that hindered the movie at all? That did it feel dated in its you know in its theme at all to you guys?
Manchester Black is kind of goofy. I mean, purple hair and, you know, the Union Jack shirt and everything.
That wasn't a shirt.
That was a tattoo.
It's a tattoo. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, all right.
It would have been less hokey if it was just a T-shirt.
Well,
right.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't find it good. I think in an era where people are still debating Superman and his relevance, you know, there's still that question of is he going to work? Because DC bungled that whole operation with the reboot, and he's still not. Except for random issues of Action Comics where Morrison hits it on the nose, he's still not the mainstream hero that DC would like him to be. And I think it's still a relevant question in this day and age where, well, you know, if you go in any comic commentary community, except for the main Superman fans, you still people calling him dumb and old-fashioned. And Paul deals with that enough every time he talks about Superman, you know.
It's pretty annoying.
Right, so I think it's still a question, you know, because he's still Superman. And to some people, that's just not cool. Those people are stupid.
Yeah. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the voice acting in here, and I think that I really liked Lois was one of the high points for me.
She was great.
I thought she was fantastic. Lois.
Very good.
Holly Perrette. She's on NCIS.
Yeah.
She should always be Lois.
Yeah,
everyone who voices Lois should have to smoke a lot of cigarettes and drink bourbon before they record.
Yeah, and I liked how plucky and sly she is. I don't know. Like she's constantly challenging Clark and Superman, and she's not a damsel.
Lois wears the pants. It was very apparent. Lois wears the pants.
Yeah,
and sly is a very good word for it because it wasn't overtly aggressive, but it was just enough of an edge that it really undercut George Newbern's more farm boyish Superman.
Yeah, but also she was served, you know, she didn't agree with him all the time, so she also led him to doubt himself a bit as well. When you know.
Yeah, I see what Ryan's saying. Whereas, like, there's sometimes where you could do Lois and you can go sort of overboard, and you're like, why does he even put up with that? You know, like, yeah. She's so antagonistic towards him that why would he, you know, be attracted to her? But here, you can definitely see she's. I mean, she's insightful. She challenges him.
Their conversation right before the final battle, where, again, Chan already mentioned, but spoilers, she expresses doubt. And I mean, to me, that's one of the most powerful moments of their relationship in this entire film, because it's like, wow, you're together. You clearly have a great fondness and affection and admiration of this man, but you have doubt that he can handle this situation. And that's a huge part of their relationship. And I thought really informed Superman's attitudes going into the final fight.
Connor, you just read the issue, right?
Like I browsed through it. I didn't read
it. All right. So it's just me who read it recently. I was trying to remember.
I have it right in front of me right here.
Okay. I was trying to remember if in the issue they show you what his letter to her says.
Let me look.
I could be totally wrong in this. I felt like in reading the comic, we don't see what he'd written, and we just assume that it's sort of like a, you know, goodbye or something, and, you know, we don't know what happens.
While I'm looking, did anybody else notice that they really pushed the envelope, the PG-13 envelope, in the language?
Yeah. Yes. You know, and I'm not a prude, and...
Yes, you are.
That's what prudes say. That's totally what prudes say.
I not to be an asshole, but I always I always ask why. What's, you know, did they need to? What's the point? And, you know, if they want to make it PG-13, that's fine. But, you know, I always kind of need a reason to push it more adult than it needs to be.
Mm. Also, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Chris, but I think that the Elite, they're supposed to be edgy characters. And one way you make characters edgy is by having them say four-letter words. And Manchester Black, I had no problem with the way that he spoke, and I thought that him using swear words a lot was fine. But the other thing I noticed as far as the PG-13 rating goes is, do you guys remember that there was a whole discussion in Superman Doomsday where Superman can't, like, outwardly bleed or whatever?
Oh, I haven't seen that movie since... probably first came out.
Okay.
So there was this debate based on the whole, like, John Byrne bioelectric field of Superman's invulnerability that Superman couldn't.
He did bleed in the movie, though.
And I remember that in this movie he did. But
no,
he
bled in Superman Doomsday.
Not as much as he bled in this movie.
No, but he did bleed. I remember that was one of the first selling points they showed in the clip reel when I saw it in WonderCon before it came out. Was that
okay?
They showed
so
he didn't bleed as much as he bled.
What
in
are
the
you
comic.
Talking about, Ryan?
There's an issue at some point, and I didn't actually do any research on this, but there was an argument at some point over whether or not Superman could bleed on screen, and he bled a lot on this movie, and that was the only thing I was trying to say, Connor, before you attack me.
How does this relate to Lois?
Well, it relates to the PG-13 rating.
Oh, okay. He's bleeding a lot in this comic, but Paul, we do not see the note.
So I thought we see what the note says here. It says, like, you know, believe, always believe, something like that.
Dumb.
Shouldn't need an editor on that one.
Dumb.
Yeah, it's grammatically not correct.
Or at least a comma.
It was written in all caps.
Yeah, believe, comma, always believe.
And if Ron was here, he'd complain about the font. So the font.
Well, it's about the sentiment, okay? And he's used to...
Do not write sentimental things in all caps, Paul, because it sounds like yelling.
I wonder when he's turning in his drafts,
maybe
articles,
he was yelling.
If autocorrect is even fast enough.
No, how would the computer...
to deal with him, so...
You know what I really like about this movie?
5,000 words a minute.
Let's get back
without
track.
Breaking a keyboard.
I really like what I like about this movie is that, like some of the best films we've had, like Crisis on Earth 2 and Under the Red Hood, is it dealt with a much more philosophical, emotional issue. It wasn't just 60 minutes of fighting. This is what is the relevance of Superman? Just like Red Hood.
What makes a hero?
Or Sons, or the nihilism of Earth, of two Earths. You know, I think so. When they really find a movie that can turn on a issue. And then they can explore that. It makes it even better. I really like that part of it, in that it wasn't just about Superman fighting these guys. It was about Superman doubting himself and having to prove that he's still relevant. I thought that was really what the strong suit of the movie was.
I thought it was about how we shouldn't let British people over here corrupt our youth and inspire their cosplay.
You know what the best part of the movie was? It was the opening credits.
I was going to talk about that. That's amazing.
Oh, they're so good!
It was sort of punk rock. It showed a bunch of old
animation.
It had the Fleischer Superman. It had the Super Friends Superman.
I imagine that Kieran Gillen really would have liked them.
It was fantastic.
I didn't know what
I was looking at, because I'd heard there was a cartoon in it, a Superman cartoon within the cartoon, and I thought that maybe I was watching that, and then I realized what it was, and I thought this.
I thought it really set up the whole. Like, maybe it's dumb and I'm getting it all wrong, but the whole Manchester Black, you know, Britpop kind of mentality. Like, I just, it felt very retro and bright colors, but in a kind of irreverent way. I loved it. I love it. Great.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone, did everyone enjoy it? Was it good? Was it
Connor? Do you want to know what a lady thought?
Yeah. So what did a lady think? Ladies so, don't watch cartoons.
They do. I make them. Just one at a time. My girlfriend and
I'm not gonna go there. So you just tell what the lady thought.
Yeah. People who have followed the progression of the Animation Brain Trust may remember that I was instructed to dump my girlfriend after she didn't like All-Star Superman.
That's right.
And
so,
I did not.
Apparently a new girlfriend, because you would have listened to us, obviously.
No, I didn't. I kept her around and made her watch Superman vs. the Elite. She liked this better than All-Star Superman. She actually mirrored a lot of the comments we made. She was a little disappointed by the animation style. She thought it was a little stiff. She liked Lois in this better than Lois in All-Star Superman, which was Christina Hendricks. And she's a big fan of Christina Hendricks. So that was a departure from her preconceived notions. And overall, she gave it like a 3 out of 5. She likes the more philosophical explorations of who Superman is and what he's about. And I think there were just some animation issues. She's also a huge fan of Tim Daly, and she preferred George Newbern.
You definitely have to dump her. There's no getting around it. You're done.
Listen, she had...
Wow. It was close. We were about to renew her green card, her visa, and... especially at the end where he has his speech, I kind of missed Tim Daly there. And
we all love Tim Daly, but she just, in this instance... thought George Newbern did a better job.
I don't dislike him. It took me a long time to get used to his voice.
Right.
I agree.
Justice League show, especially after Tim Daly. But he wasn't bad. It's just Tim Daly is like the voice. And I'm not saying no one can do it. There's lots of people.
I like that we don't put up with people who are like, it has to be, you know, with Batman, with Kevin Conroy.
Well, I didn't say it had to be him. I'm just saying, yeah. Obviously, Conroy's the best Superman. Doesn't mean no one else can do it.
Conroy's right. The best Superman? That's a departure.
But I'm saying, yes, he is the best Superman, the best Batman. He's the best all of them.
Remember that episode of the animated series where Superman pretended to be Batman? And
yes.
He did called Kevin Conroy's voice?
Dark Knights, I believe, or Gotham Knights. Anyway. I liked it. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a film you can watch. Like if you're like Chris, you've never read the comic, or me or Paul, or if you've read the comic recently or not. If you are into Superman, if you want to know why Superman's cool, if you have a little sibling or someone who doesn't understand why Superman's awesome, you can show them this cartoon.
Not that little. They're swearing.
Well, it's not that bad swearing. Just his ass.
This is a great place to introduce them to swearing.
That kid's heard ass.
I would have no problem watching this with a 10-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I said double digits.
They talk about doing it, but who knows what doing it means when you're 10.
My girlfriend said the same thing in terms of showing this to children, so apparently we're all on the same page.
Yeah, you know, if the 10, you know, a 9-year-old could handle it, the, you know, 10-year-old I would have no problem with, you know. But no, it was good.
When you hear the dumb thing that made me happiest about the movie was that they actually animated the jets. It wasn't those
it wasn't the CG jets.
It was the out of place vehicles they usually drop in a CG animated.
That's a really good point. That's
because
there was some CG in this, especially in the cars with like Lois getting in and out of cabs in England for whatever reason. And it wasn't.
Have you been to England? They're actually CG cars there.
Well, either way, it wasn't so egregious that I couldn't handle it. I thought that the CG is finally maturing to the point where it doesn't actively detract from the animation happening around it.
Doesn't look like somebody dropped a cardboard vehicle on top of my TV while they're.
Also, props to DC for having a really crazy extra, and they have Joe Kelly talking about, you know, the book and some of the history of the Elite, and you know, he did like the Justice League Elite book after this book because the issue of Action Comics was so popular. So they have that stuff, but then they also have this really weird, like really ambitious documentary about like Superman and the moral questions and politics and stuff, and they talk about like Guantanamo, and it's like. And they have some really interesting talking heads on that. It's not just like comic people. Like they actually went out there and found some people who know what they're talking about. And it was one of the most surreal things I've ever watched on one of these.
But it's the central question of any superhero, right? I mean, it's again, in the real world, if someone had these powers, would they be able to resist the temptation of just being like, fuck it, I'm just taking over. You guys, can't do this yourself. I mean, that's really the question, right? I mean, it's the Dr. Manhattan conundrum. It's the reason why the Authority was interesting. It's
oh, I mean, we've seen a rash of those comics in the last, you know, in the last decade with you know, what, A God Somewhere, and, and Irredeemable. And, yeah, it's
Alpha.
It's,
what's the one?
The Somni, and
it's a great one. Oh my God, what's the name of it?
Peter Snaberg.
Yeah.
Art,
Peter J. Tomasi, and then Peter Schneeberg and Chris Samney.
It was just called Alpha, wasn't it?
No, Alpha was the character name. God damn it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's I mean, it's the central issue of superheroes, right? I mean, it's it's the question.
The mighty.
Yeah. It's the whole, you know, absolute power question, and that's what makes Superman is that he has absolute power. But he's not corrupted by it, and that's why he's Superman.
Because at first you go, "Yeah, you would take out those bastards," but then you think that's a slippery slope. I think there's a brief mention of it in the book, in the issue on the show, because I'm looking at the comic in the movie, where you know the one guy's like, "Yeah, he should take out everybody we don't like," and he's like, "Well, what happens when you're the one he doesn't like?" I mean, it's at a certain point, you know, everyone's going to be in the crosshairs. It's going to be like Irredeemable. So. That's what makes him great.
Yeah, and I'm used to, like, you know, Grant Morrison and Jeff Johns and people like that talking about it in these kinds of things, but they had, you know, like, I don't know what their qualifications were, but they were not comic writers, and so it was kind of interesting.
Now, the elephant in the room is the other big extra, which I watched, which was the featurette on The Dark Knight Returns, which is the next version. We're getting a two-part Dark Knight Returns adaptation, so part one comes in the fall of this year. And a number of things are great about this feature. At one, great 80s synth pop background music.
Which
makes me think they're going to really go 80s with this movie.
Okay.
Two, Peter Weller is awesome as old Batman.
That will be cool.
He sounds like he's just broken gravel when he talks.
Yeah, he sounds like someone with a mustache.
Yeah. Well, if they're staying true with the 80s motif, which it sounds like they are,
they might,
that's good. I hope they do, because you know the Reagan era U.S. is such. I mean, that's what that book is about.
I think it changes the whole story if you don't place it in the time. It's such 80s paranoia that runs throughout that entire story.
Yeah. But I want to see creepy old Ronald Reagan drawn.
I can't imagine that's going to happen.
Oh, God, that would be awesome.
Anyway, that's going to happen.
That would be so freaking
the,
sweet.
The guy they have doing the adaptation, he gave me a lot of confidence. That guy sounds like he really knows what he's doing. And, you know, he had a lot of insight on the tone of the book and, you know, what Miller was going for. And so, I'm pretty interested in this one.
I'm more terrified for this than any of them, because this is my Batman story. I mean, terrified. I love Year One, but this terrifies me.
No, Connor, I'm totally with you, because I'm not as much terrified for Batman, but I'm terrified for the Superman aspect of Dark Knight Returns, because we've just spent the past however many minutes this gets edited down to talking about how Superman is relevant and cool and awesome. And Dark Knight Returns presents a Superman that is a complete tool, because Frank Miller hates Superman, and I hate his depiction of Superman. So I just think it's really interesting that we're going straight from one of the most pure and
excellent. I think it's a great.
That's why comics are awesome, Ryan.
It's a great Superman because he basically takes Superman down that path. what if he goes that way to be the tool of the government?
He wouldn't do that, Connor.
Well, it's an Elseworlds.
According to Frank, yeah.
Listen, if nothing else, it has Michael McKean.
Yes.
It has David Selby as Jim Gordon. I liked.
He sounded great.
He sounded really good. He sounded like he was really into it. And come on,
the
Michael McKean
from Modern Family as the Robin, who sounded also good. It sounds like it's gonna be a great cast. They didn't show a ton of. They showed a lot of animatics and stuff. They showed a lot of unfinished animation.
Yeah, I'm sure people are going nuts thinking that's the finished animation. Like, no, what is
when
that?
When does this come out, Connor?
So the fall 2012 is all
right, yeah.
As long as Frank Miller isn't directing it, we should be all right.
Among the four of us, who are going to endeavor to reread the book before the movie comes out?
I reread it every year, so.
Paul hates it.
I don't hate it. I just don't like it at all. That's all. I just don't like it. It's just not my thing. I don't know.
He's a big Superman fan. So
I think it's good, and I'm a Superman fan.
What about you, Connor?
I've actually been thinking about it. I keep my absolutes out where I can see them, so I constantly look over and see them.
You always want to know where they are.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Do you know where your absolutes are?
I think I'm going to. It's been a while since I read it, and watching that the little featurette on it made me want to read it really badly, because most of the stuff they showed was actually just panels from the book.
Yeah.
So Chris, maybe, Paul, no.
No, I will read
it. I'll read it.
It's on my shelf. I don't have the absolute edition. I have the soft cover, but I'll revisit it, because it's been a few years, but I won't enjoy it, certainly.
Well, I'm going to read Dark Knight Strikes again.
Wow.
That'll be my... Okay. Contribution to
that's actually going to be the second movie that they make. They're doing
The first movie is they say is basically leading up to the fight with the mutants, and the second movie is going to be the Joker, and will it be Superman as a bad guy? We'll find out. I'm not convinced it will be yet.
I never really thought of him as a bad guy. You know,
he's a reluctant tool of government. He's not happy about what he has to do, but
But you know, he has a chance to screw Bruce over in the end, and he doesn't. I mean, he's still Superman, but
you know who wouldn't do that? Superman.
Superman wouldn't do that. Exactly.
I predict that we will not see Ronald Reagan. We will see a generic president, and then Superman will be in it. But you know, because ultimately he's still a good guy.
I don't know. I think you might see. I don't know.
We're not going to see Ronald Reagan. No way.
Why not? Why not?
He's Ronald Reagan.
It's an election year, Connor.
Be a president in a Ronald Reagan mask. You going to see swastikas?
That would be awesome.
Boobs? It would be awesome, yeah.
Man,
I think we're more likely to see Reagan than to see swastikas.
You know, screw that. If you're doing Dark Knight, then fucking do Dark Knight.
Right.
No, if you're gonna go there, don't stop halfway. Do the freaking movie. And it needs to, especially if it's going to be, you know, of the time, then all that stuff needs to be in there, because it loses relevance if it's not a part of it.
Well, we'll find out in a few months. It looks good from what we saw, and I hope there's a synth pop soundtrack, which would make it awesome.
And Bizarro Ronald Reagan and swastikas.
So we'll,
Ronald Reagan, he speaks in negatives.
Whenever they do come out, it does come out, we'll be there, as we always are, culminating together for the Animated Brain Trust, and we will be talking about Dark Knight Returns in the fall. Until then, you can read Superman vs. the Elite, Paul's review on iFanboy.com. You can also go to iFanboy.com to comment about this under this show, talk about what you thought about the film. It was a good film. It's enjoyable. It's a strong line. The line has not lost any steam, despite the loss of the showcase shorts.
Maybe miss those.
Yeah. Sadness.
So, until next time, I am Connor.
I'm Paul.
Chris.
And I'm Ryan.
It's newly single Ryan. Ladies?
No, I still know. She wants to see Dark Knight Returns, probably. Maybe I have no idea. But
Yeah.
I'll make her read Dark Knight Returns. I'll read Dark Knight Strikes again. It'll be great. I ask myself, is all her blast? Is the only
this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for No additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.